We got Stephen Brunt. Morning, Stephen. We are on the parade route here in Calgary. Obviously, the Stampede kicks off today. It's a huge event. People camp out overnight to keep their spots. What if there were to be, and maybe that's the question, is there, and if yes, what would be the event that would have Stephen Brunt camping out overnight in order to gain access or have prime seating to?
Oh, Lord. Now, that's a question. I probably need more time for that one. Let me think about
that. Yeah. Because it's probably not a parade.
No, it's probably not a parade. No, that's correct.
Yeah.
I would not do that. I would not lose sleep over a parade. It might be a concert of some, but I have to think of you know, who would I actually do that for?
That's right.
You might need a time machine. Maybe as an old Ali fight you could go to, but you had to camp out overnight, something like that.
I would do that for sure. Yeah.
See, this is that's more of a time machine.
Yeah. Ali Frazier won. I would have slept on the street outside Madison Square Garden. Yes, that's
yeah.
True. But
this has now become a time machine as opposed to just camping out. But I understand what you're saying. Yeah. It's amazing. People love the parade. It's a big one here in Calgary, and the weather's going to be great. It's been hot out there too, right? Hasn't it been
Why is it Newfoundland though? Chilly.
Yeah, I guess so.
Actually, right now I'm looking out. We're having bizarro wind storms right now. So the wind is blowing at literally 30 miles an hour and gusting upwards from that. So I spent the whole night listening to things blow around outside. I'm not sure what they were, but they're no longer here.
Yeah.
Bears?
They're in some neighbor's yard. So, yeah. The bears have blown away. Yes.
Well, I was going to ask, has there been any sightings of Brunt's bear?
Well, I'm not sure specifically my bear, but yes, there have been bear sightings in the last few days. They have the big warning sign up on the trail behind me that the parks people put out to scare the tourists, which says bear in the area. It doesn't tell you what to do, right?
Right.
It just says bear in area, and then it kind of leaves it up to you whether you want to go walk in the woods or not, which it doesn't say bear in area run or bear in area don't take this trail or bear in area don't worry about it because they won't hurt you. It's just a big picture of a big old bear, so... but I have not myself seen the bear, but I've heard of, yes, there have been sightings. But I think these are the real wild bears, not the ex-dump dwelling bears, which were the problem several years ago. I think those ones they've all gone to their great reward, from what I can tell.
Bear in the area, he's behind you right now.
Yeah, exactly. Don't panic. Don't panic, he's friendly.
So we have a commissioner in the Canadian Football League, and I'm led to believe there should be some optimism because this guy played the game. Do you share that sentiment?
I would accept that Larry Smith played the game, you know, and I'm not sure that ended that well, as I recall.
No.
I don't know. Maybe I'm being cynical here. I was counting up, and I forget what number I actually got to. How many commissioners I have been around professionally? Because I've been around a long time, but this cycle of optimism, and this is the guy for this age, this is the cutting edge guy, this is the right face for the league, this is the guy that will fix the problems, from that point to the point where they run him out of town on a rail, you know, like how many guys have gone out with their dignity intact? I would, you know, like Mark Cohan did, and he had lots, and there were lots of people in the league that groused about him, and you know, he had the same David Braley problem that every commissioner has had who wasn't named David Braley when David Braley's been in the league. But, you know, he kind of went out with his head held high, so I give him a lot of credit. But, you know, and I think this... Look, I think what people saw this week is a guy, you know, who is smart but not slick, looks like an offensive lineman, didn't wear a tie, you know, gets it, right? Obviously gets the league because he was part of it for a long time, but, you know, has a interesting kind of business pedigree, which suggests that he knows more than blocking schemes, which is good. And he said all the right stuff. But, you know, it's funny, like the swing between Jeffrey Orridge, who is, you know, a slick American-born television executive, and Ambrosi, who's a, you know, not particularly slick Canadian, you know, it's like those were the two finalists last time. You know, so what was the job description? You know, because you couldn't see two more different guys really in terms of their pedigree, and and yet they chose Orridge first, and now they've gone back to the guy who was the finalist. I wish him luck. I think there are a lot of good things that are really good about the league. You know, the new stadiums are great. you know, that stadium in Saskatchewan's nuts, right? Just seeing it on TV, seeing it live will be quite something. But that's a crazy stadium for the CFL. It's terrific. You know, the TV numbers are this year so far have been solid, not spectacular, but okay. It's a good TV property, and I think the league will chug along. I think, you know, like I also lived through several moments where, you know, the conventional wisdom was that the league was going to fold. I don't think the league's going to fold. I think it's kind of core strengths are what they are, and again, you've got the backing of a TV network, and I don't think it's going anywhere. But I also think that you can't make it what it isn't, and you can't, and this is speaking about Eastern Canada, you can't make it what it was. You know, Ottawa would be the exception to that because that's a great story, and Jeff Hunt's done an amazing job in revitalizing that market, bringing it back fresh, but it almost had to go away for that to happen.
Yeah.
You know, in Toronto, Toronto, you will forever be beating a dead horse, and it'll never be 1976 again. And everybody's got to kind of just acknowledge that, but that's it. That's the deal, and you're going to, the league, if you want a franchise in Toronto for other reasons, you're going to have to kind of carry that franchise. So,
and you can't do in Toronto what you did in Ottawa, right? Because if it leaves, it may not come back.
If it leaves, it will never come back in Toronto. There will never be that. You know, people won't be sitting there pining for the historical franchise that was the Toronto Argonauts. They will forget about it in an instant, and it'll never come back, and no one will ever put the money into it again. So, look, they've got the best ownership they could possibly have there right now, and they have the best stadium situation they could possibly have right now. And if they win, then if they're good, they'll draw marginally more people, but they're never going to be at the top of the conversation, and that's just true. And the commissioner can't solve that, and the owner can't solve that, and no signing of you know, you sign Johnny Manziel or whatever, that's not going to change that. Just so that everybody, you know, I think status quo is sort of the status quo in the league right now, which is, you know, strengthen the prairies. In the East, you need owners who are willing to lose some money and ride it out. You had Wettenhall in Montreal do that. You've had you know, Bob Young and Hamilton for sure do that. You've got the guys in Toronto, and it will be forever thus, no matter who the commissioner is. I wish him luck, and he seems like a good guy. And the one difference between him and Orge is that, you know, he may understand how terrible the officiating's been, and you know, from a player's point of view, maybe he'll get that. But you know, we also won't have a guy standing up at press conferences telling us that he grew up watching the CFL while, you know, living in Brooklyn. You know, which I believe was untrue.
You're not the only one that sort of smelt some hogwash there, Stephen.
What
is on the to-do list? Like, they've got a TV deal that's successful. You have 9 teams. Toronto is what it is, as you noted. No matter all the buzzwords you want to use, oh, we're going to market to young people, or we're going to use Twitter. Well, whatever. Everyone in the world's doing that. What is on a to-do list for the commissioner?
I think the big one is going to be, and this is, you know, and again, this is a way bigger issue than the CFL or the commissioner, but it's what everybody in sports is going to have to deal with, which is the changing broadcast environment. That, you know, we still talk about the idea of kind of networks and rights fees and advertising in a conventional sense, right? That, you know, you sell your rights to a network, and then they go sell your games, and everybody looks at the ratings, and you look at the demographics and all of that. Well, you know, we're almost in a time warp here. We're really talking about the past, that we all know that people are going to continue, that a greater number of people are going to consume their games in ways other than that. And some people are doing it right now. You know, when we talk about the young demographic and, you know, how we're going to attract them, and you're right. Everybody's trying to sell through social media. Everybody's trying to sell through Twitter. But the point is, you know, they're never going to pay for cable. They don't sit and watch conventional television. They don't interact with the games as product the way my generation does, where we kind of sit and wait for it, and, you know, we have a TV and we point the clicker at it. You know, people are going to so how do you take the commodity that is your games and monetize it in a kind of post-network television world, where the content still has a tremendous amount of value? And people still want to watch it live, unlike a lot of stuff, because you don't want to watch a taped game. And, you know, there's that kind of freshness and excitement to it. But it's not going to be, your next TV contract's probably going to be smaller than the one you've got. Just because the TV part of it isn't going to mean as much. So that's look, that's a big challenge for everybody. You know, MLB's done a great job. They, you know, they got ahead of it with their new media operation, and they're making a lot of money in other ways. And, you know, people talk about how baseball TV ratings in the States are way down. They are. But they've you know, they made a fortune in new media. So that's it. You know, how do you sports economic model has been the same for almost 60 years. And now it's going to change. Well, it is changed, and it's changing radically, and it's going to change fast. So that's going to be his challenge. And I know, you know, again, in theory, that's why they had a TV executive in the job for the last couple of years who didn't succeed. But yeah, that's going to be it. Yeah, the stuff we talk about, you know, officiating, instant replay, you know, quality of the game stuff. Yeah, he'll deal with all that. And I think he's probably got a pretty sound knowledge base for that. But the big issue for everybody in sports is going to be, as we make this shift from, you know, TV in quotation marks to other in quotation marks, you know, handheld or, you know, however you're going to access that content, how do you continue to make the amount of money you make or make more money from it? So that's same challenge facing the NFL and the NHL and everybody else.
You mentioned MLB and their, you know, technology. I remember I was watching, I was at a Stampeder game, and Ian Busby used to write for the Calgary Sun. This was years ago. And he had like the quad screen of games on his laptop in the press box. I'm like, what is this? He's like, oh, it's the MLB app. It's like the, so I would be curious to know what the ratio, because of cord cutting and that, how many people have the MLB deal on their phone, iPad, their Apple TV, as opposed to how many people still have subscribed cable. I mean, it's not going to be 50-50, but I you're right, because that their technology is some of the best.
Well, here's the other thing, too. At home on your TV, you're worth a bit of money to an advertiser, but if you're subscribing on your phone, it's $100 a year.
Yeah.
You start doing the math, if you get a million people at $100 a year, like, you can see how that adds up.
And there's, you know, there's other ways to make money, right? There's, you know, and there's... look, we work for a multifaceted communications company that, you know, kind of can get you with the cable or get you with your phone fees or you know, there's different ways to make your cake, right? But yeah, look, MLB is so good at it that, of course, they are now running it for the NHL, that the NHL subcontracted it to them because they know what they're doing. So they got way out ahead. And, you know, and the difference, what's the difference between baseball and every other sport? Inventory. 162 game season. You got a million games, right? And so that could be a disadvantage if you're saying, okay, we're going to try and sell this to a network, and we're going to try and get people to sit still for 3 hours to watch this massive schedule. But, you know, where is it an asset? When you're doing exactly what you're talking about, when you're going to your hardcore fans and you can say, we're going to give you every game from everywhere. There will not be a day between April and October where you will not have multiple choices. You know, you watch game after game after game. So they took, you know, they took what was a disadvantage in a lot of ways and turned it into an advantage. Makes sense. But yeah, that's there is money to be tapped. You know, look, a lot of people steal stuff on the internet. A lot of people don't pay for things that they probably should pay for. That's the truth as well. But you know, I think that idea of instant perpetual access, no matter where you are, which, you know, there's a lot of TV commercials pointing in that direction right now. That's the driving force. That's what people are looking for. And the number of people sitting in front of TVs in the old school way versus the number of people watching it and consuming it in other ways in other places, you know which way that ratio is moving. Those of us who do it the old-fashioned way are dodos. You know, looking around saying, wait, where all the dodos go?
Yeah.
This is quite the interesting spot that Ross Atkins, Mark Shapiro find themselves in. 4.5 games out. Their team's actually starting to play some ball here over the last three. And now you're into the All-Star break by next week. What do they do if they're three games out of a wild card at the deadline, but a million teams between them and the second wild card?
Yeah, you know, plus Sanchez coming back tonight, so in theory, your rotation's going to be intact, right? Yeah, it's the long tease that has been this season, right? Which just as you're about to kind of surrender, they kind of yank you back a little bit. You know, judging by, you know, Mark and Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins have done a lot of media the last week, so they've talked about this a ton, and judging by what they have said, they're kind of looking at this as an opportunity, you know, heading towards the deadline to maybe acquire assets. You know, not like what no one is saying is fire sale. no one is saying we're just going to strip it down. I think, you know, they are open to doing business, especially if they can acquire major league assets or major league ready assets that might, you know, are not rentals. So I don't think they're going to go out looking for a rental player to try and win this year. But if they could get some control in 2018 and 2019, you know, and if that's the case, you might deal somebody semi-significant. You know, the problem is teams that are willing to deal guys off their major league roster or near major leagues generally are not teams that are contending. They're teams that are, you know, some distance away from that. So, you know, how do you find a fit, right? Not the normal fit is contender rents player. The team that gives up the player gets prospects back. Well, that's not – the Jays are kind of half in and half out right now. So, you know, I think if things go really badly in the next 2 weeks, they will move the pending free agents. So Estrada is a pending free agent. Liriano is a pending free agent. Bautista, if he was willing to accept a trade, is a pending free agent. You know, if you're right out of it, you don't care too much what you get back necessarily. But otherwise, yeah, you try and get something back. And those, you know, none of those guys are tearing it up right now. So that's a bit of an issue. The bigger question, though, is are there deals, you know, kind of baseball deals, where you would consider trading a Marcus Stroman, where you would consider trading Justin Smoke, another year of control, where you would consider trading Josh Donaldson? You know, are there deals where you would make a baseball deal where you would get a big enough return that would help you in 2018 and 2019 and maybe this year? So I'm skeptical about that, but that's kind of that's the way they're talking. My guess is they're not going to do much of anything. You know, I know that's not a very satisfying answer, but I think if they fall 10 games out of contention, then they'll move the guys they can move and they won't worry too much about the return. And if somebody steps up and says, we're going to give you a boatload of prospects for, or a boatload of major league ready A-plus prospects for Marcus Stroman, they probably listen.
I feel like Hap, Smoke, and Donaldson are the bellwether moves. Like, what they do with those guys will tell you a lot about what this franchise is. Priorities are, because those are guys that do have term and some control left. Those are the ones, yeah, that fascinate me. I totally agree. It's easy to sell vets with their expiring deals, and of course you listen on everyone, but you probably want to keep Sanchez, Stroman, Osuna, but those three guys in the middle that are neither young nor expiring, I'm curious about them.
Well, and the way the organization's set up, if you trade those guys, you know, again, depending on the return, but let's say, you know, you trade those guys for prospects, then you're kind of white flagging 2018, right? You're saying we're not going to be in it next year, but that doesn't make much sense the way this team is constructed, you know, because you have, you know, you still have the core of a controllable rotation right now if you choose to go forward with it, right? You lose Estrada and Liriano, but you've got, you know, you have Sanchez back, you have Biagini, you have a rotation going into next year that might not be too bad. You've got the Tulowitzki and Martin contracts; you got to live with them anyway. They're not going anywhere. So, and you don't have anybody beating down the doors from the farm system who's going to be ready in 2018 that I can see, except maybe Anthony Alford. So your best course is probably to try and win next year. You know, not mortgage the farm to try and win, but, you know, not do the opposite. So I would be surprised if, you know, kind of full surrender, we're giving up the next 3 years moves, because it just doesn't make sense the way the team's kind of put together. It's kind of a half and half team right now, right? Half old and built to win now, and half with some really good, young, controllable guys who, you know, if you're going to wait 3 or 4 years, those guys are then not going to be controllable anymore. You know, they're like 2020, 2021, look at the way the contracts line up. There's a bunch of guys on this team who are going to be free agents.
So just for discussion's sake, if you get a team like Houston who looks at this as, we got a real shot, what's it going to take for Marcus Stroman? If you get that deal, like you say, it makes a lot of sense, we can't turn it down. Is there a way that you can replenish assets that way and then find an arm in the offseason by way of free agency where he may not be Stroman, but you're not without, you know, you don't just lose an arm from your rotation where you can kind of, you know, bridge that gap or have a blend of both?
Yeah, well, you got a whole winter to work with, right? Yeah, absolutely. And it depends on the return. And, you know, the other thing it depends on, look, Marcus Stroman's having a great year. He's having a terrific year, by and large. But you don't know what their internal evaluation is of Marcus Stroman. You know, there's always been questions about him Height doesn't measure heart, et cetera, as the cliches goes. But you know, people still look at him. Greg Zahn still looks at him and says he's a relief pitcher. Yeah. He's not, you know, a guy his size is not going to last as a starter.
Is that Zahn? Yeah, I feel like that's very Zahn-y more than maybe a conventional thing.
Yeah, but you don't know. He is not a guy. They didn't draft him. He's not their guy. They may, you know, you may internally think, we're going to sell high here. We're going to sell high on this guy because he's controllable. He's having a great year. He's going to be really attractive to a contending team. He's already pitched in the postseason, right?
Yeah.
You know, sometimes they think different things about players than we do on the outside, or they know things about guys that we don't. So, but you would think you would get a haul for Marcus Stroman. And that could be tempting.
That's the only reason you even debate it, right?
Yeah, it's got to be a huge bounty.
Yeah, it's got to be a huge bounty, and it's got to be a kind of a franchise-changing deal where, you know, it tees you up in a way for next year that you wouldn't be otherwise. And again, you know, if they had three or four kind of blue-chip pitching prospects that were beaten down the door right now, you would say, well, why would you possibly do that? Or maybe you would say, go ahead and do it because you got these guys coming. But, you know, their two best starting pitching prospects, Connor Green and Sean Reed Foley, have kind of spun their wheels this year. So, there's not, like, the next Aaron Sanchez is not sitting there waiting to move up. So it's very tricky. And it's more of a test for the front office than it would be if this was kind of clear-cut. You know, if it was a clear-cut go-for-it situation or it was a clear-cut fire sale. You know, and the third factor, 40,000 people a night in the stadium and big TV ratings.
Yeah.
You know, do you really want to just tell those people to go away for 2 or 3 years? If I'm the owner, I don't. Yeah. No, if I'm the owner, I want to keep them happy.
And if you're into selling high, smoke's gone, right? Like, there's no way he's ever more valuable than he is the next 2 weeks.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. And God love him, you know?
Yes.
It's the greatest. It's one of the best stories ever.
It's incredible.
And, you know, with the crap he took over the winter and all the stuff, and, you know, that extension, and, you know, what a bunch of dummies those guys were for signing the extension. Right now looks like
what are they doing? He's a bench player.
Yeah. So that's crazy. Yeah, I would trade him tomorrow and put Steve Pierce at first base.
Yeah, that's not bad idea.
Or yesterday. But either way, trade.
Don't give him away, but I assume you get something for him, but something good for him. But yeah, that's the unexpected surprise, right? That's a gift. And you know, God love Justin, but, you know, you want to bet on him doing this for the next season and a half?
Or half season.
Yeah. Like, Michael Saunders is an all-star last year. He's playing for Buffalo.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, Steve Delabar, yes. Yeah, so, you know, like, it's great. It's a great story. But there's one where, you know, you would wonder what, you know, everybody else might be thinking the same thing we're thinking. But, yeah, if you could get a really nice return for him, you've got a guy who can play the position, wouldn't hurt you too much. Yeah, I would do it.
Take care of yourself, my man. Good talking to you as always. Have a fine weekend. What will you be up to between now and Tuesday?
Not a hell of a lot.
Huh? We got to get you out here. You should be the Stampede Parade Marshal next year. If you're not going to be the CFL Commissioner, there's no excuse. Get your butt out here.
Okay. What's the process? Do I have to announce my candidacy, or can you guys take care of that?
Get some Stetson and get out here for early July next year. We'll do the rest.
You know, and a great big belt buckle, right?
Yes, of course.
I was going to say, you're maybe a little late. I'm not sure how long it takes to fly in here. But for this year's parade, I'm not sure you're going to make it. And just we are working on the technology of the Stephen Brunt ice fishing morning show next winter.
It's in the works.
I'm available.
Because you've never gone ice fishing. We've got the technology. Guys, Rob Kerr in the afternoon, they were broadcasting from beside a lake. They went fishing. Bollmeister and Curtis Lazar and Brian McGratton, they took a bunch of kids out fishing earlier this week. So we're like, if they can do it, we can do it.
If they can be beside a lake, we can be in the middle of the lake.
That's right.
Okay. I'm ready to book my flight.
All right. Thank you, Stephen.
See you, boys.